Welcome back to the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. Off-season gets us into the doldrums, no doubt about it. But I'm very excited about today's guest. He's a first-time guest, and I think this is going to be a good one. I'm bringing on author slash Grantland.com writer Mark Titus, who, of course, started Club Trillion, and he was a walk-on at Ohio State and gained significant internet fame and I don't know about fortune. I'm gonna just say over the years here, and he's been out of college almost 2 years now, and he recently put out a book, Don't Put Me In, Coach, and it's his travels and time at Ohio State. Thanks for coming on, Mark. Do you want me to call you the Shark, or is Mark gonna suffice there?
You can call me whatever you want. And it was baby steps. I wanted to get the fame first, and then we'll work on the fortune later, I think. You can't do both at once. I don't know.
Exactly.
So we're working on the fortune right now, for sure.
All right. So you're almost 2 years out of college. I am almost 7 years out of college. But those first 2 years, for me, they went by faster than my 4 years of college combined. Oh, yeah. Kind of like turned around and I was like, I can't believe it's been 2 years. I mean, what has it been like since you left the campus? I know obviously you spent a good deal on this book, but what was life for you like, you know, upon graduating? You obviously touched upon the Globetrotter stuff in the book, and we'll get to that obviously, but overall, how's life been, man?
Well, I was spoiled because I got a book advance, so I got a nice chunk of change right out of college, so I didn't really have to worry about scrambling to find a job. So basically, I just kind of hung out and played video games all day and enjoyed not having to go to practice. That was huge. I felt like I had so much time on my hands because I didn't have to, you know, do two-a-days over the summer and spend all the time during the winter at the gym. So that was kind of nice, but reality's starting to set in a little bit. I don't know. I don't know. The book advance, I think, might be running out a little bit, so we're gonna have to work on the finances a little bit. But it was a lot of fun. You know, I tried to stay in college as much as possible, which I think is what most people do right after they graduate college.
Of course.
I tried to hang on to college as much as possible. But reality setting in, and I'm gonna have to figure out what I'm gonna do with my life now.
Well, you didn't did you try and dip in on a few parties and stuff like Halloween following your senior year?
No, nothing.
Okay,
like that.
Okay, because that's a problem. I mean, listen, that's a common problem, but for someone that has some notoriety, then you can't really be doing that, you know?
For me, like, people don't believe this because I kind of play up my personality in my blog that I'm like a wild party animal. But, when I was in college, I was actually like the lame guy who just liked to sit at home and play video games and go to bed early because basketball kind of took a lot out of me because I wasn't in great shape ever during my career. So after practice, I just like to go home and crash. So it was rare that I got out too much. So that's what I mean by reliving college. I'm doing that kind of stuff, just playing video games and have no responsibility, waking up at 11, that sort of thing. So
the envy.
I'm trying to change that a little bit.
The envy pours over me. Let's do the book first, and then we'll kind of see where we go from there. You said you got an advance, so if there's any writers here who have written or have attempted to write a book, chances are most of them have never gotten an advance, so they already hate you for that. But when did the prospect of writing a book occur? You know, when was it like, okay, actually, I think I can actually do this? When was this?
I think it was kind of when I had an audience for my blog. At first, my blog was just kind of for me and my family and friends just to it was first of all for me to complain about not playing and kind of I was really insecure. So I thought if I was self-deprecating about it, it would help me deal with not playing and not getting off the bench. I was kind of like the kid in kindergarten, you know, who pees his pants. And they always, you know, like the best approach when you pee your pants in kindergarten is to point out to everybody that you just peed your pants.
Yeah.
So that way they can't make fun of you, you know. That was kind of my approach. I was like, hey, everybody, look, I'm on the bench. So that's why I started the blog. That was really the only goal with the blog. And I had nobody reading it at first. It was just like my parents read it just because they will do anything I tell them to because they want to be supportive. But outside of that, no one really read it. And then when I went on Bill Simmons' podcast, I think was my first like huge media thing. I went on his podcast and I went from having like 500 total blog hits in the first 3 weeks to averaging like 40,000 a day for the rest of the season. And I think it was like right then when I had like a legitimate audience and I started getting fan mail and I started getting people, you know, like actually recognizing me on the street. I kind of realized that a book was kind of the only logical end game, you know, because There were a lot of stories. A lot of people would email me and tell me, you know, you gotta be juicier with your stories. Tell us stuff, you know, push the envelope a little bit. And, I tried to explain to them, I can't, cause I'm on the team and I don't want to get kicked off and all that kind of stuff. So, the book, pretty much as soon as I had an audience, I knew that there were a lot of stories and there were a lot of stories from my, freshman and sophomore year before I started the blog. We had the like national runner up team, you know, that I didn't get a chance to write about. So, pretty much as soon as I had an audience, I knew that I could tell all those stories. And there's a lot of stuff. I mean, the entire book is new material from – I didn't take anything from my blog and put it in the book. So there's a lot of stories that I kind of was hesitant to write about on the blog that I kind of let loose with on the book. So, yeah, pretty much the book has been a few years in the making for sure.
You're able to be incredibly honest, which is refreshing, obviously, but you've got this ability to write about the sport, write about your experiences, and genuinely be truly funny. I mean, there'd be a couple times when I was reading the book next to my fiance, and she actually asked me to leave the room because she was trying to watch some TV. And so that's great, but you're also, yeah, I mean, listen, I remember just when I was running collegehoopsjournal.com, my independent site back before, way before I started at CBS and you were kind of doing your thing. And I was reading your blog and I was always, just amazed by how honest you were able to be just because it's just, you know, cause, kind of most players will be kind of unfiltered like that if you ever really get close to them. And the book extends that, and just to bring listeners into this, I mean, first of all, you really go after Costa Kufos kind of flippantly and then kind of dismiss him, which I thought was interesting. Being a guy who, you know, kind of just followed hoops from the outside, you know, to kind of see some preconceived notions confirmed there. I thought that was, I thought that was something. But what about, Evan Turner here? He's the only guy in the book. All right. Cause here's my deal. Like from the outside, I figured you and I, but I also came on late. Like I came on, I want to say like mid 2009-ish when I really found out who you were and your relationship with Evan. In the book, it's more like you're kind of relentlessly killing him. Like with every other story, if you say something, you're like, oh, by the way, you clearly indicate that it was a joke. But with Turner, it's almost like this, you don't give it up. Like, you know, you kind of constantly rag on him and it's almost like, no, this guy, like, he's my jackass brother. He deserves it. Is that, did the book truly reflect that? Or was this more of like a continuing inside joke where you're like, listen, I'm going to kill you in the book and I'm never going to let it go.
It was kind of an inside joke. It's kind of like this running thing. Yeah. That I want people to, I enjoy it when people say, do you and Evan really hate each other? Are you friends? What's the deal with that? Cause, I think there's like a part in the book where I start talking about how awesome he is and how he's been a great friend and he's a great guy and all that. And then like the last sentence, I say something about how much he sucks.
Right.
And just go on to the next thing, you know, cause I enjoy that, keeping people guessing on that because that's kind of the big topic is, you know, cause he was obviously the national player of the year and, everyone knows who he is. So anybody who knows who I am knows who he is. And it's kind of a fun inside joke, but no, I mean, like, it was pretty honest though in the book. There's a lot of, you can kind of get a feel for our relationship. It definitely was something that, when we hated each other, we hated each other and, and we had to be broken up from fights. We wouldn't talk to each other for a week or something. We would, he would freeze me out like on the court whenever when we would do, in practices, we'd be on the same team or something. He'd freeze me out and I'd be wide open and he'd shoot a fade away, you know, three guys in his face when I'm wide open right next to him, which, you know, probably was a better shot anyway. Him shooting with three guys on is probably better than me wide open. But, yeah, I mean, there were times where we really hated each other. And then there were also times where we got along great. And I would go over to his place or he'd come over to my place and we'd play video games, hang out, watch TV. It would just be the two of us, you know, or on the hotel in the hotel on road trips. He'd come to my room and we'd just sit there and watch some basketball and talk about whatever. So that's why I tried to liken it as much as possible to like a brother relationship, you know, cause, I have an older brother and that's kind of how we were growing up. We would fight like crazy all day. And then at dinner we would sit down next to each other and be best buds. And then after dinner, we'd go downstairs and play video games and when we love each other. So that's kind of how me and Evan were. We were just, really on again, off again. It was kind of like we were dating, honestly, because we would fight like we were dating, and then we would make up and we'd be best friends and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really weird relationship, and I don't have a relationship or a friendship with anybody like Evan. So it's kind of weird to me to experience him, I guess. But yeah, when the book came out, he definitely texted me and was upset with some stuff, but I had to calm him down, and I think we're pretty cool now. So to be honest, to answer your question, I really don't know what our relationship's like because it varies day to day. But I do know that I wish him well, and I love watching him play, and I support him, and I hope he does really well in the NBA and all that. But the fights in the book were definitely not fabricated whatsoever. We definitely fought a lot, and I don't know. So like you said before, I really wanted to be honest, and that's what I try to do with Evan too.
Given that he's making millions now in the association, how often do you even talk to him? I mean, or anyone that – I mean, I guess your relationship maybe with Greg, is maybe it's older, so it's tighter. With any of those guys, how frequently is a phone call, is a text, is an email, is a whatever?
Well, like it has less to do with them being like big shots who don't have
right.
time.
Yeah,
peasant
yeah.
little me. And I think it's just they're busy, because it's hard to figure out what their schedule is. They're always traveling or playing or getting ready to play and all that. So during the season, I really don't talk to them a lot. I mean, and that's true even not just Evan, but like Mike Conley, for example. I haven't talked to him all season long, and he lives in Columbus in the off season, and he and I saw each other about every day. Over the summer and especially right before the lockout, he and I hung out a lot, played a lot of golf, went bowling, did a lot of stuff together. And then ever since the season started, we kind of lost touch just because I never know when I'm supposed to text, I don't want to bother them. It's not really that big of a deal, I guess. So I don't know. I kind of lose touch with them during the season, but I'm kind of one of those guys that's just like, I've been there before, like when I have a lot on my plate, like when my book came out and stuff like that, people would bombard me with texts. And calls and emails and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of put myself in their shoes, and I'm like, yeah, they're probably getting a lot of calls and texts and stuff. Right. So maybe I don't want to, pile onto them. I'll see them in the summer. So, yeah, I haven't really talked to him much. But Greg, on the other hand, I've seen a few times. He's living in Indianapolis now that he's he was waived by Portland, and he doesn't really he likes to make it clear that he doesn't have a job. I think we went out to dinner a couple weeks ago, and he made me pick up the tab because he's unemployed now. So he's kind of enjoying that more than he probably should. I have to remind him that he's, however many millions in the bank, and I just graduated college. But I talk to them a little bit during the season, but mostly it's during the off season because a lot of those guys come back and live in Columbus, and that's where I live still. So I get to see him a lot, and we get to hang out.
Is Conley a good golfer?
Yeah, he's a great golfer. He's one of those guys. He's the best leisure sport anything I've ever met. Like, he's the best. Of all my friends, he's the best golfer, the best pool player, the best – I mean, video games aren't really considered a leisure sport, but maybe they are now. I don't know, in this new age of gamers. He's the best video game player, bowler, pretty much anything that's like a you can consider – ping pong player. He's the best ping pong player, all that stuff. Like, he's unbelievable, and I don't really know how to explain him. He's one of those guys that just, like, decides – He's like, I remember like when it was like 3 years ago, he bought some golf clubs, or he has like a contract with Adidas, and they gave him some tailor-made clubs or something. And he's like, he told me, he's like, I think I'm just going to get good at golf. I'm just going to try to get good at golf. And I just laughed at him. I was like, yeah, Mike, it doesn't really work that way. You kind of have to, you have to play golf forever. Cause I've been playing my whole life and I'm terrible at golf. And, he's like, no, I'm going to get good at golf. So he, over the off season, he takes golf lessons. He golfs every single day. He's like a member of like three or four different clubs in Columbus. Huh. So it's funny. He just sets his mind to something and he becomes really great at it. So I don't know. That's always interests me, though, that he's always the best leisure sport. He's really competitive. And I don't know. I got to find something to beat him in because I'm struggling right now. I think I can get him at bowling, actually, but that's – not exactly something to brag about, I don't think. So I need to find something else to get him at.
You know what I did recently? I went duck pin bowling for like the first time ever. Have you ever done duck pin bowling?
I've done that. Yeah, I've done that.
That's crazy, man. You feel like the Hulk. For anyone listening that doesn't know, a duck pin bowling is basically it's a bowling ball the size of essentially of a softball, and then the pins are one third the size, and there are no holes in the ball. You just kind of whip it down the lane, regulation style length, and it is incredibly addicting. Very, very fun. I never want to go back to regular bowling again.
Yeah, that's how I think that's how Daquan Cook used to come bowling with me and Mike during their 1 year at Ohio State during all of our freshman year. And that's how Daquan would he would use like the lightest ball. He'd be one of those guys that would get like the girls' ball or like the kids' ball,
the six
that
pounder,
was like the 6 pounder. he would not put his fingers in the holes, and he would throw it down the lane as hard as he could. That's how he bowled. So,
Goodness. One of the themes in the book is your bowel issues. I mean, dude, yeah. It was like it was every other chapter. I mean, it starts with you declining to go into, I guess, one of the first opportunities you had in your college career. You were like, well, listen, Thad, I'm actually pretty good here, man. And then you actually miss the final game of the year because you're in your hotel room during the tournament. So, I mean, hey, listen, again, with the honesty, it's amazing. But, dude, what's up, man? I mean, have you checked out by a doctor?
I don't know. I you know, being on the toilet is always like it's kind of my haven, I guess. I consider myself a man's man. You know, I like to eat huge steaks, meat and potatoes, and then go spend about an hour on the toilet and browse the internet. So that's kind of my thing. But like you said, I wanted to be honest and I don't know. I think some of them made for funny stories because you know, you're in like this tense situation where you're on the bench and. My favorite one involving my bowels is probably – well, I mean, the part where I told Coach Mott I didn't want to go in, that was kind of awesome. That's kind of where the title of the book comes from. But I think it was like during the Illinois game, and I don't know if you remember. It was a Big Ten tournament, and this game went into like double overtime. And I had to go to the bathroom with like 8 minutes left in regulation, and I was playing this game on the bench where I was like, should I go now and try to come back for the end, or do I want to miss anything? And I kept I think I played that out in my book where it was like this inner struggle of like, when do I leave the bench? And then I finally leave the bench. And when I come back, the game is all but over and I miss like the exciting parts and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. I think it's like that kind of makes it funny. You don't really think about that. You don't really think about guys having to use the restroom on the bench, you know?
Right.
So I guess like maybe that's why I got caught up telling those stories. And honestly, those are some of my most memorable stories because I was kind of like the walk-on who was – it kind of shows that I don't know, like the one in Iowa, I think I made the bus wait on me.
Because you didn't want to walk past the Iowa bench or something like that.
Exactly. There's stuff like that where it's like, I don't know, it just kind of seemed pretty funny to me, like looking back on it. I don't know, but I do have some problems, I guess. I guess I kind of put in every single instance of me having to relieve myself. So it's not like, I don't know. That's not like a certain percentage of it. That's all there is. So it's not like
I need a new chapter. What can I tell? Oh yeah, I'm
spread over really the course. But you spread it over the course of 4 years. You know, I guess it's not that bad, right? But I don't know. Yeah, that's definitely gotten a lot of feedback. A lot of people are worried about me and my digestive system for sure.
I told myself I'd get the two words fiery butthole on this.
Fiery
podcast.
Butthole. Yeah. That's
first story in the book relating to the intestinal issues that you have, and it's the common running theme throughout, and it's very, very much appreciated. Best story that didn't make it into the book from your college career would be what?
To be honest, I put everything in there. I don't know. Like you said, it's a really honest book, and I keep talking about that, but that's kind of what I wanted it to be in that, like, I didn't want to leave anything out just for the sake of making people, you know, look good. And I've gotten some criticism for ragging on my teammates maybe a little bit too much. But to me, it was like I wanted to tell an honest story. I wanted to, like, if you have no idea what it's like to be on the Division I basketball team, I wanted you to be able to read my book and get a good idea of what the camaraderie is like. And I think that's really the whole goal of the book, is just kind of to explain the camaraderie of a team. And so I put in all the bad stuff, all the good stuff, all the in-between. But I guess like there was one story, I guess, now that I'm thinking about it, that the only story that actually got cut out from the first draft was I won't name names because that would kind of defeat the purpose. That's why I cut it out to not embarrass anybody. But one guy on one teammate over the course of 4 years tried to get me to do his drug test for him.
Wow.
And I wrote about that. And he ended up passing the drug test, and I didn't actually do it for him. So don't worry about that. I hope the NCAA doesn't come after me. I want to make that clear. I did not take his drug test for him. But he ended up passing, and I don't know if he got someone else to take it for him or if he just like didn't actually fail like he thought he was going to or something. But I wrote a story about that. It was pretty funny, actually. When I was writing it, I thought it was a funny story and less of like a damning, like, you know, like this could be a violation. This could be like an investigation type story, you know?
Yeah.
So I left that one out, but it ended up not being a huge deal. I mean, it wasn't like he was He passed the drug test. He as far as I know, he never failed another drug test again, and it was all good from there. But it was just kind of a I was writing about the story of him trying to ask me to take the test for him, and it was a pretty awkward conversation because I never knew what weed looked like until like my senior year of college.
I was
really sheltered. No, I swear. I mean, I grew up in the I was really sheltered, really an introvert. To me, that was a really funny interaction because I don't know. It was kind of one of those moments where you're like, oh crap, this is what college basketball's like. Like I didn't know that this was actually how it's like. I didn't. So
can you just say where you were approached? Was it like post practice locker room?
Yeah, it was in the locker room. I went first. I did the drug test first, right? And then I come into the locker room and I see one of my teammates is like kind of nervous looking. I'm like, hey, what's the matter? You want me to pee for you or something? And he goes, yeah, can you? I was like, wait, what? And then come to find out, yeah, he failed. It was just the issue, just so we're clear, was just with marijuana. So not that I don't want to make it like
that. That's just what I'm saying. Well, how about
steroids or doing crack cocaine or anything like that? But it all worked itself out and it wasn't a big problem. But I felt like I should probably take that out there because I didn't want to make guys look bad.
How about this? And whatever you want to say or can say, feel free. And whatever you don't, that's fine too. But in the past week or so, there's been, I guess, an increased dialogue about marijuana in college athletics because the magazine did a story. Then our own Dennis Dodd basically wrote, like, who gives a crap if college athletes do pot? Because, honestly, 60% of college kids, if not more, smoke. I would say more at least do it once, and I would say, you know, a good 30 to 40% do it regularly throughout college. In your experience on the team or in general, how prevalent would you say marijuana is in college basketball?
You know, like, I was being honest. I had no idea what I know what weed smells like. I've been to enough concerts to know that, but I was really sheltered. I've honest to God never smoked in my life, which a lot of people find unbelievable because I'm a pretty laid back guy and you kind of spend like 10 minutes around me and you think I'm a huge pothead just because of my personality. I've always been really sheltered and haven't really been into the drug or the marijuana thing. But I agree that it like shouldn't be a big deal because I really don't like understand the like, do you gain a competitive advantage from smoking weed? You know, isn't that like really the only thing that matters? And I don't know. I'm for legalization of weed throughout the country or whatever. And I say that as a guy who, honest to God, has never smoked and had no idea what weed looked like until 3 years ago. But just because I don't understand what the big fuss is. But as far as like the prevalence, I don't know. I think it is just kind of like you said. It's just kind of the same percentage as you would get with any other population of the student base or whatever. There were definitely guys I think who smoked. There were definitely guys who didn't. And probably some guys in between who tried it here and there. So I don't know. It wasn't ever an issue. It wasn't like, you know, guys were showing up high to practice and all that kind of stuff, or guys had weed in their lockers or anything like that, you know? So I don't really think it was that big of a deal. And I still don't really understand why it matters. Like why you get tested for it anyway, because it's not like I said, it's not like you're getting a competitive advantage. And I feel like that's the only thing that should really matter. Right. That you're getting better at basketball. And I would think, I've never done it, like I said, but I would think that you'd be actually worse if you're playing basketball high, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I think if any coaches or anyone has any issues with it, it's because it's like a college friend that's a burnout, right? And they just don't – they stop going to class, and then it's like 2:45 in the afternoon on a Tuesday, and they're stuck inside a Call of Duty in their own little world.
Yeah.
That's more why it might be an issue than
– Yeah, coach. I've always been like – I don't know. I've always – like growing up, I was always – really harsh on the marijuana culture, you know, like when I was in high school and you read guys like busted with pot and I'd be like, what an idiot, that guy deserves to be suspended, kicked off the team, all that kind of stuff. But now that I've been through it, I'm like, what's the big deal? You know, like I understand it's illegal, but I don't think it's because the substance is bad for you. I think it's more to do with like the government hasn't figured out a way to make money on it yet. But yeah, like I just don't see the big deal having lived through it. And I'm kind of the other way now. Like I hear guys, I think an Ohio State football player actually just tested positive for weed at like the combine or whatever it was. I think that news just broke around here and my reaction is just like, so what, who cares? It's not that big of a deal. I get that it's illegal. If it's controlling their life, like any substance, you know, if they're always like showing up high and yeah, blazed out and skipping classes and all that kind of stuff, then yeah, it's a problem. But if you smoke a joint on a weekend, I guess I don't really understand why that matters all that much. But I don't know. I probably just offended all the old people, any old people listening to this, all the old timers.
No, we're the like 18 to 32 year old people here on the pod.
Okay, yeah.
The only one older than like 32 that listens is Parrish and Goodman when they're vain and got to listen to themselves. So.
Oh yeah.
So we're good.
So, yeah. Well, I'm sure everyone listening probably agrees with me then. So I don't need to drive my point home anymore.
You've got some dynamite drop in references in the book, like little Street Fighter with Blanca Lebowski. Now you also, I don't know if this was intentional and I wanted to bring it up. You mentioned Lost. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Lost guy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you realize when you did this that you actually mentioned Lost on page 108, which is all of the numbers combined add up to 108, like 4-5, you know?
I'm going to say, yes, I did know that. But I really didn't. And now that I do know that, I'm going to like,
isn't that amazing?
I'm going to switch that. I'm going to act like I did know that from now on. That's amazing that you found that out.
Well, because because it was like I was hardcore into the show when it was on, and I just kind of knew when you added up all the numbers, you know, 15, 16, 23, 42, all that, it all added up to 108.
I think didn't they show that in the show one time?
They did, yeah. It was on one of the episodes. Exactly. So when I saw that, I was like, damn, either that's the most Lost coincidence ever, or this is a savvy dude here that was all over it. So I'm gonna naturally just lead right into Lost and ask, like, one, how were you, like, a casual fan, big fan, like intense fanatic? What was your level of interest in the show?
I was well, first of all, now that you mentioned doing something with the book, I will say that I planned. I'll answer your question in a second, but I remember. I planned on doing the thing where this is probably like a cliche thing that like all people who write books and think they're like clever try to do. But I wanted to do the thing where like the first letter of every line you read down and it has like some sort of message or something. But the publisher wasn't too keen on that because it would have like had to move stuff around and all that kind of stuff. So that was the closest I came to some sort of subliminal whatever. But I was a huge Lost fan. I was kind of like, it's hard to be like a casual fan, right? I mean, once you watch it, you like it kind of sucks you in. I was the guy who canceled all any plans, like any my girlfriend wanted to go on dates on whatever Wednesday nights was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I told her no way, it's not happening. We got to be home by 9. If we're going to go anywhere, we have to be home by 8:45 because I got to get in the right frame of mind to watch the show, you know. So I was a huge Lost fan. I wasn't too fond of the ending, I think.
Okay.
I don't say that just because that's the popular opinion. But I don't know. As an experience, it was a great. It was one of the most. I've never gotten into a show like I got into Lost. And as far as just like entertainment, as far as just like keeping me busy, I guess throughout the duration of the show, it was pretty awesome. As a complete show, I don't know if I would recommend it to anybody because it was kind of a letdown at the end, I thought. I'm sure if you're as big of a fanatic as you seem, I'm sure you kind of have theories that make it all good at the end. It all ties together in your mind. But to me, it was a little bit of a disappointment, but the show was entertaining. I've never been addicted to a show like Lost. And, I really did love it, yeah.
No, it has an incredibly addictive quality. The final season, actually, I thought the finale was fine. We're like 2 years out from the finale here, so I don't know if this is like spoilers or not, but I won't spoil anything for anyone that's like maybe doing a watch and they're like mid season 3 right now. But there is an aspect to the final season that I didn't like. And you, anyone listening understands what we're talking about. Like, there's clearly a running theme through the final season that I didn't like, and it kind of feeds into the finale, and that gives it some issues there. But the on-island stuff in the finale I thought was really, really good.
No, yeah, I think they did as good of a job. It just seemed to me like after the finale, I said to myself, here's what they did. That for the first 3 seasons – how long was it? 5 seasons? Was
six.
It? Six. Okay, so like the first 3.5 seasons, it seemed like they tried to just make it as crazy as possible, just throw in random crap and ask questions later type thing.
Yeah.
You know, just like science fiction, polar bears on islands, all that kind of stuff. And then they spent the last 2.5 seasons trying to figure out how to make sense of it all. And I think once they got to the part where they're like, oh, crap, now we need to make sense of it all, they did as good of a job as they could. But I don't know. I was kind of hoping – I'm not one of those guys that gets hung up on the polar bear. I shouldn't have mentioned that. I'm sure I just, I don't know, did myself a disservice by mentioning the polar bear, because those are the that's the huge complaint by all the
Really? Yeah, I had no issue with, and they actually explain the polar bear. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. So
yeah, I know, but a lot of my friends who watch the show, like, that's their first complaint. It's like, what was that polar bear about? I'm like, who cares? I was like, such a minor thing, and yeah, they did explain it and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, that's just a popular thing. But yeah, it was stuff like that though that like I don't want to spoil it too much either, but it just seemed like it got a little crazy, and then they tried to make sense of it all. And I think they did as good of a job as they could, but I don't know. It was a little bit of a disappointment. I guess it was a disappointment in the sense of the standard I had for it and what I expected. But to be honest, I'm not sure it ever could have lived up to the expectation I had after, like, you know, season three or whatever, season four, whenever it got really good. So
yeah. And now, like, half the people listening to this podcast are like, I don't care. The show is 2 years old. Give it up. But, hey, no, he dropped in a Lost reference. I'm going to bring it up. You also drop in what I think was one of the truest lines in the book, related not to basketball whatsoever, but how picking odd job on Bond is flat-out BS. And that shouldn't even be a house rule. That should be international law. Anyone that might be lost on this, N64 Bond, come on, 007, this is one of the most classic video games of all time, basically. So I thought that was just a really, you know.
Yeah, Odd Job was for the, like, the beginners, I think. And I didn't have a problem if someone's never played the game of using Odd Job, but my brother would, like, yeah, who played all the time, he would try to use Odd Job. I mean, it's just like, it's like the guys, yeah, who use, like, the you know, they use the Heat in NBA Jam this year or whatever, you know, in the basketball games this year, the Patriots, or, you know, they always have to use the best team. But Odd Job was, like, on a whole nother level. It was like that on steroids, because the dude was, what, like, short, and you couldn't shoot.
Oh, yeah, he was the worst, man. All right, so if we're playing, okay, I go out to Columbus, I swing by, you got Odin and you got Conley there, and you need a fourth for some Bond, but you're picking. What level and what weapon are you going? What's your go-to here?
I haven't played Bond in so long, I forget.
Do I need to bring this up for you right now? Do I need to bring up the levels here? See, I'm a remote mines in the caves guy, so.
What was the one where, I'm trying to think, it was like all gray and it had a lot of ramps.
That was Stack. I think you're thinking of Stack.
I think that was the one I played the most, and that was the one I was most comfortable with, yeah. Yeah. And we always played Golden Gun. That was the way to go.
Golden Gun is good, or All Pistols is good. Like, stuff like that, grenade launchers is just BS. I mean, remote mines.
That was worse.
Remote mines is kind of BS too, because you just kind of, like, it's just utter destruction whatsoever. But listen, that was just, I mean, that and Tecmo Bowl and Mario Kart were, like, the games of my youth. Mm-hmm. I mean, sleepovers up till 4 a.m. playing those.
Oh yeah.
Your eyes and. It's always there's a no pun intended, there's a bonding moment whenever you go to a party, like if you're having kind of like a just a boring time at a party, you just, like, kind of sidle up to someone, get Bond into it, and you'll know someone's worth their salt if they're willing to kind of, like, divulge you for 15 minutes to talk about Bond.
Exactly. Well, that's my point. That's what I was trying to tell you earlier, that I wasn't, like, the party yet. Like, to me, a good party would be having, like, a couple buddies over, get a six pack of beer, you know, get a case of beer and play Bond all night, versus going to the frat house and, you know, doing that wild scene. So that was what I did in college. Yeah, we hung out and played Bond, Mario Kart on a Super Nintendo. NBA Jam on Super Nintendo was also a popular choice for us. So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
There you go. That is great. Listen, the Globetrotter stuff as we wrap up the pod here. You touch on that, and I guess it's the epilogue there. But I found it a little interesting in that they kind of were like, yeah, let's get this white dude who's popular on the internet and was an Ohio State bench warmer. And then you kind of, like, you kill the Globetrotters, man. I think you kill the Globetrotters worse than you kill Kufos or any other teammate. You kind of relentlessly go after them. Just I guess briefly recap your experience with them and why it was ultimately, you know, not worth it and a huge waste of your time.
Yeah, like, I think that's why I killed the Globetrotters, is because they just completely wasted my time, and it was very, I guess, disrespect. I don't really ever feel disrespected, so I guess disrespectful.
You stepping, yo? Yeah.
Yeah, but it was just a complete waste of time. I mean, I see where they were coming from, and I think I tried to, like, lay that out in the book and kind of, like, explain what I thought maybe their approach was, that here you have this guy who's popular on the internet, has a following, you know, and the Globetrotters, let's be honest, they're not, and I say this, I probably sound butthurt because I don't like them or whatever, but, like, let's be honest, they're not, like, as relevant as they used to be, you know? So I think they saw that I had this following on the internet. I'm a quirky story. you know, that I'm known for being a guy who sits on the bench and all that. And I think they said, hey, we need to get this guy involved. We'll figure out how later, but let's just get him on board. And they drafted me, which I didn't realize I had a draft, and I didn't realize they let white people on the team. So that was a double confusing moment for me when they called me and told me I was drafted. But they draft me, and they did it for publicity and all that, and I understand that. It was awesome for me. They sent me a Globetrotter jersey with my name on, with a shark on the back, and a number one, like I was their number one draft pick and all that. So I still have that, and it's still awesome, and I wear it around when I try to be goofy and brag to my friends that I was drafted by the Globetrotters and all that. But yeah, it was they draft me, and then I don't hear from them forever. And I'm trying to, they initially, after they draft me, they're like, hey, we're going to have this mini camp in August. And I think they drafted me in June or something. I don't hear from them until the end of July, I think it was, when I actually called them, or I emailed somebody. I was like, hey, remember when you drafted me and you sent me the shirt and all that, and we had this good thing going? Like, I haven't heard from you guys in forever. When's that mini camp? What's going on there? And they go, oh, the mini camp. Yeah. That's in like 4 days. You can definitely come though. I'm like, what, 4 days? And it was clear to me at that point right then that, like, they didn't want me on the team. They just wanted to, like, get the flash in the pan publicity by drafting me or something. So I knew that. And so I used it to my advantage and tried to, like I asked them stuff. I was like, oh yeah, I want to come to the mini camp. Oh yeah, I want to be on the team. Oh yeah. And I put them in an uncomfortable position to where they had to, you know, accommodate me more and more. But yeah, when I got to the mini camp, I mean, they didn't have a hotel room for me. They didn't have they had jerseys with numbers on them for every guy that was like at the mini camp, so they could you know, figure out which guy was which. They had like a little program corresponding to the jersey number and stuff. I didn't have a jersey number. I didn't have a hotel. I didn't have pretty much anything. So it was clear that they had no plan of ever having me to this tryout. But I had fun with it. I mean, and then the other reason I wanted to go in on it was because I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement with them, because they knew that I would write about it, because they, you know, like, kind of knew that I was, yeah, like I had a blog and a following and all that.
Right.
So they made me sign this thing so I wouldn't write about it. So before I wrote the book, I had like four or five different lawyers read over the non-disclosure agreement. And then I wrote up a draft of what I wanted to write, and they all gave me the okay. And I was like, sweet, I'm going in on them. So I wanted to kind of like, no, you can't shut me up type thing, because they were trying to censor me a little bit. I know that I can't talk about what we did in the tryout. I will say that it was a lot more basketball oriented than I thought. You know, like, I kind of expected just to be goofy a little bit, but it was a lot
some
of
some dude whistling the theme in the corner. Yeah, exactly.
I thought we were gonna, like, you know, fill up buckets of confetti and practice, you know, pouring them at people and stuff. It wasn't that. It was a lot more basketball oriented than I thought, but. Yeah, the whole experience was miserable. They were late to everything. They were, I think I told in the book, we came home from a tryout and they wanted to meet with me. They told me on the bus ride back to the hotel, they're like, we want to meet with you at 8 o'clock. And this was like at 5 o'clock. They're like, we want to meet with you at 8 o'clock and talk about, you know, you possibly being on the team and all that kind of stuff. And we get back at 5 o'clock, and I was like, all right, so I got the meeting at 8. I'm going to go grab some food real quick. And as I'm like, 10 minutes away from the hotel, walk into a restaurant, I get a call and they're like, where are you? I thought we were meeting with you. And I said, what? No, we're meeting at 8. And they're like, oh, are we? We forgot. And I'm like, how can you be an organization? How can you guys, like, and these were like the people at the top of the organization, you know, like, these are the guys running the thing. It's not like some, you know, guy on the low end of the totem pole. These are the guys running the Globetrotters, and they're as disorganized and dysfunctional as I've ever seen. So, I don't know. I did make fun of him a lot, but it was a complete waste of my time. And I just, I don't know. Cause I definitely played it up. I told my followers all about, getting drafted. I gave them a ton of publicity, not that they needed me to. But I was really excited about the opportunity, and they kind of dropped the ball a little bit. So, in the end, I think it's good because of how crazy it were. I can't imagine, you know, spending however many months out of the year traveling all over the world with those people. I would have been pulling my hair out for sure, but it was still a complete waste of time. But in the end, it made for a good story, I guess. So there's that takeaway.
And now you're doing stuff with Grantland. And is that true?
Yeah.
Is that like an in-season thing, or are you going to do some off-season stuff as well?
Yeah, we're kind of like figuring out what I'm going to do in the off-season. That's kind of been the last few weeks we've been trying to determine that, but yeah, I'm gonna write some off-season stuff just as it comes to me. I don't know. They've been great to me in that, like, they have the mentality of like, if you don't have anything to write, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out later. We'd rather you write something good than write, you know, basically quality over quantity, which is awesome for me. But yeah, I mean, obviously college basketball is my thing, not just because I play, but I've been a fan of the game, college basketball in particular, for my entire life. I know that's pretty much all I know about in the world of sport. Not all I know about, but that's, I know it like the back of my hand. So college basketball is going to be my thing on there. So I'm probably not going to write as much in the off season, but yeah, once I can't wait for November to come back around and we get back into it for sure.
Well, that's why I've always been so diehard at the sport, Mark, is because it starves more than any other mainstream American sport. College basketball is the longest off season, so when it finally comes back,
yeah,
you know, it's just like a gallon of water pouring it down your throat there. Listen, this was great. I'd love to get you back on. There are plenty of other things just kind of inside the game and your experiences I'd love to get into further. But when we've got more context and more things to talk about, I'd love to do another go-around, right, man?
No problem. I'm down for that.
Yeah, you can follow Mark on Twitter at Club Trillion, and that's CLUBTRILLION. And don't put me in coaches. No doubt available at whatever bookstores are still actually physically in existence in your area. And also go on Amazon. You can go to clubtrillion.blogspot.com. Easily findable. And it is a quick read. I mean, I took care of it in 4 quick bursts over the course of a week. So
yeah, I mean, with the bowel movement theme of the book, I tell people it's about 6 trips to the toilet to read the book. So
seriously, yeah. It's good. And I didn't even touch on the Aaron Interesting. We'll save that.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
Yeah, that'll be later, and that's a tease for you to for more people to go out and do. Okay. Thanks so much, Mark. I'll be touching.
All right, thanks.